Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hi, this is Sally Wells from Cape Town, and you're listening to the podcast that has been top of my list for 7 years, the Tennis Podcast.
Oh, Sally, thanks ever so much. 7 years, eh? We've been going for nine. What you been doing for the other two? Anyway, we're delighted. Thank you.
What were we doing for the other two?
mostly talking to each other without anybody listening, I think, Catherine. and if you heard those first 2 years, you won't be surprised to find out why. Hence why Catherine refuses to listen to any of them. But Sally, thank you so much for your support. And I think Sally writes us notes from time to time and is always lovely. And we much appreciate it. Catherine's still in her studio dressing room. She has left it since last time we spoke. But she's back in it again because it's a daily thing, this talking on TV about tennis. So Catherine's here, all sort of done up for TV. It's a bit different to what it normally is.
And what are you trying to say about my standard podcasting appearance, David?
Well, normally it's
please,
a bit more like
please
Matt's.
Finish that sentence.
Normally it's more like Matt's and right now and mine.
Oh, great.
Yeah. it's going well, this, isn't it? How you doing, Matt?
I'm okay, thank you. Yes, I've got Naomi Osaka on the screen and I'm talking to you about tennis, so things are good.
Oh, it has been the most fantastic week of tennis so far, hasn't it? I mean, these, what is it, a 12-day tournament or something like that, or more, 13-day tournament? It started last Tuesday, I think. The day before you came on air with your studio work, Catherine, I know Prime were doing coverage from the Tuesday. And it's kind of hard to get your head round, I think, these tournaments. Because we're a bit out of practice. I mean, usually there's a month, isn't there, where you just cram in Indian Wells and Miami and that's your month. And now we've had a year of it and it feels like we've been going on forever and we're still halfway through. But I think it's been brilliant. What has it felt like to you?
Yeah, it's felt brilliant. I also don't think it's entirely our fault that it's difficult to get to grips with the goings on, because it all is a bit bitty on that front. You've got halves of the draw playing on different days, but men's tournament at a different stage to the women's. And then today you've got all of the women's round of 16 matches happening on one day, but you've got half of the men's draw playing round three matches. And quite often when I'm whizzing through roundups and updates, I find myself say, so that's Daniil Medvedev through to the next round. because sort of on the spot, without the draw in front of me and the reminder, there's quite a lot of mental gymnastics going on. And it is just the nature of these, what once were week-long events, just kind of being expanded and stretched out. But usually I'm not such a fan of the expansion and stretched outness, but right now I'm pleased that this is going on as long as possible, because it's great stuff.
It's great stuff. I'm going to direct this to Matt, because Catherine is clearly biased about this because she works for Prime Video, are covering both the men's and women's tournaments. But as somebody who commentated on the women's tour for 6 years when BT Sport had the rights, and I mean, I loved every minute of it. It was great, great fun to do. But just as a viewing experience, Matt, to be able to watch, I think for the first time in my life watching tennis, to be able to watch this event on one broadcaster where you just put up them in, obviously because they do the menu system as well and you're able to choose which match you watch. I think Tennis Channel in the States have got something similar as well because they've got the rights to both tours now. That is a real plus for the viewer, isn't it, in terms of it feeling like this combined, coordinated whole of a tournament.
Yeah, it is. It's a real game changer, actually, having the men's event and the women's event on the same platform. We've not had that in the UK for quite a while, really, with these combined events. I know Prime got the rights last year to the women's tour, but then there was barely any combined events last year that were on Prime. So this really does feel different and elevated. And yeah, I mean, I must say there have been a few days where I've sort of thought, are there men in Miami? I'm just sort of watching the women's matches one after the other because of the strength of that draw. I'm enjoying the different side to the men's event in Miami this year. People who've listened to this podcast will know I'm a big defender of the big three, and I've not really had big three fatigue, and I'm sort of endlessly fascinated by them as characters and players. But at the same time, there is something different and enjoyable about this event with some a bit more unpredictability in the men's draw. Take out two or three players and suddenly every match feels more relevant potentially in terms of who could go on to win the title. But then the women's event, I mean, they've all shown up and they're all delivering, and you've got blockbuster matches from sort of the third round onwards. And it's just a who's who of exciting talent, players who have delivered on that talent. And to have all the matches in one place is a real bonus. But a hill I will die on is that tennis events don't need to be longer than a week. Other than slams, I am enjoying it for the same reason Catherine said.
Keeping me at work, Matt.
Yeah,
keeping me at
indeed,
work.
Indeed, for that reason, I'm enjoying it. But get on with it. I do kind of think
I'm loving it personally. I think maybe it's because I've just had withdrawals really from this time last year when we were just in the first month of 6 months of nothingness other than Tennis Relived, which was a joy in its own right for us personally. But crikey, I realise now just how much I missed it. She's doing a good job, isn't she, Matt? Hey?
Such a
she's
good
bloody
job.
Good at this presenting.
So
like
good.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, the other thing I like about the fact, I don't want to say like about the fact that the big three in the men's side are not there, because it's obviously a downer that they're not, and Andy Murray's not there. But I also, I mean, it's easy to say, well, it gives the young men a chance to have the spotlight. I actually think, go on, Catherine, what are you going to say?
You so nearly said next gen then, didn't you? And
yeah,
stopped
I did.
Yourself.
I did, that's right.
Why did you stop yourself?
Well, because I think it's time to move on from that.
Mm.
But no, I mean, I feel like this is a tournament where the women deserve the spotlight. And because you look down the draw and it is just, it's what's been bubbling up for 18 months now or 2 years. And it's all coming together because I think particularly because Andreescu's now fit again and playing and part of the whole story, and all these other players have joined in her absence. This feels like the moment that it's all bubbled to the surface. And I don't want, really, them to not get the spotlight, because they deserve it right now. And I think the danger is that Federer, Nadal, Djokovic are so huge. They're such important figures. And they rightly command the attention when they're around as well. But just this once, because they're not, the women get the highlight reel, really. They're the ones that deserve the best staging. I mean, last night there was a moment where Garbiñe Muguruza was playing, is it Alina Kalinskaya? Is that right?
Anna Kalinskaya.
Anna Kalinskaya. And that was a cracking match, and Muguruza came through. And then this match between Andreescu and Amanda Anisimova started. And I think I got
and
through...
And you went to bed.
Well, I got through a set.
You didn't. End of that first set, David, you were not present in the WhatsApp group anyway.
No, I know, but I did. I
and
caught,
there was, you know, it was good chat. that you were missing out on.
I know. I woke up to 114 unread messages. I mean, that's not an exaggeration. But anyway, I did watch the last two games of that set because you two were banging on about it so much that I started to think, I'm really missing out here. So I'll go to bed. Because, I mean, it's 1 a.m. for me. I've got to get up at 6:30 for my kids' school. And, you know, you haven't. So, anyway.
I just worked a 14-hour day, David. And in my break, I was Googling indoor hammocks. That's how much I value sleep. And yet I sacrificed it for Andreescu against Anisimova.
I think the problem I had was somebody messaged, we've got Andreescu's chutzpah and we've got Anisimova's backhand. And at that point, my device went on immediately. And I had to watch a couple of games to just tide me over until the morning. But tell us about that match. What happened? Matt, tell us what happened.
The headline is that Andreescu won in three sets. I think it's important to say that I went into that match with excitement, but slightly low expectations, because we've not seen either player play brilliantly, truthfully, for over a year. You know, their best tennis was in 2019. Various reasons for that, obviously, injury a large factor in that. So I was nervous that maybe it wouldn't quite live up to how good it could be. But in the end, it was everything I hoped it would be and more. Andreescu, I think, is playing a lot better than she was in Australia. She looks a lot physically stronger. There were a few concerns that she might have a bit of a back injury in that second set and third set. I think she took some timeouts. But basically, she's playing really well, which is just such a joy to see. And then you add in Anisimova, who has the purest, smoothest backhand imaginable. Add in when she hits a forehand well, that's a good stroke as well. And you just had two exciting talents going up against each other. And there were momentum swings and there were gear shifts from both players. And each set was in the balance. And it was just 3 hours of absolutely wondrous tennis, really. I'd forgotten how good it felt to get really embroiled in an Andreescu three-set match, as we all did so often in 2019. It's a really fun experience to watch an Andreescu tennis match.
Why is that, Catherine? Why does she get people in that way?
Oh, I don't know. You're asking me to sort of tap into my inner psyche there, because she really gets me. If I had to choose one thing to be able to watch in tennis at the moment, it would be Bianca Andreescu in a three-setter, and possibly Bianca Andreescu full stop. And I can tell you all the headline reasons that you both know, and probably everyone listening probably knows about why she's great and why she's good to watch. But there's still something else that I am not quite able to articulate that makes me just always need to watch her tennis matches. I'm sure it's elevated, amplified by the fact that she's been away for a year, so there's a slight sort of novelty to it all. I feel that slightly with Osaka as well. She plays a sparser schedule than the other players. There is that feeling of, oh, a little bit of gold dust being sprinkled. And, you know, watching Osaka comes close and a few other players, but if there's one thing, it's Andreescu. And I don't know whether that's kind of specific to me, that she has these character traits that I so wish I had. I want some of that let's go and come on and swag, as Matt put it. I think it's an absolute personality feat that she has all of that and yet isn't irritating. I would usually be so irritated by that type of person. And I'm not remotely irritated by her. I just sort of want to be her. So, yeah, you've asked me to try and articulate something that I am as yet unable to do, but it's a work in progress, David.
How much of it do you think is because she packages that into winning tennis? I find I can forgive traits that sometimes I would find annoying if it creates a wonderful tennis player. I don't find those traits annoying in Andreescu, but there are players, I mean, the obvious example is Nick Kyrgios. I find him a lot more entertaining when he's winning. And if he's winning and all the theatrics are going on, that's the kind of absolute sweet spot. And Andreescu does manage to win so often.
For sure. If you're saying check me out and you're losing, it looks a bit crap.
Fair point.
Yeah, I mean, without question. But also, like, Andreescu has absolutely no problem letting you know all the time how much she wants it and how hard she's trying for it. Sometimes possibly too hard. And that is a very significant distinction between her and Nick Kyrgios, I would say.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to draw a comparison between Andreescu and Nick Kyrgios there.
No, I get the point. Just on Anisimova, when you were waxing on about her backhand, I mean, it does take me back probably about 3 years ago to when I first saw her beat Petra Kvitova with that backhand. And I still don't think I've ever seen a backhand quite as sweetly struck as that in men's or women's tennis. But you also added, Matt, if she's in position.
Mm.
And I do feel there is a question mark over whether she will ever have good enough movement to be in position enough in big matches when it matters. Because it really struck me when we were covering the French Open, and I thought she would take out Halep again because she'd done it the year before. And then to watch the match, to watch her swinging through this ball and realizing that that's not enough because her movement doesn't allow her to compete toe-to-toe on a clay court. I just wondered whether, is that the sort of movement that you are ever going to fully overcome? She's so tall and strong, but she looks cumbersome.
Mm. I remember Mary Carrillo saying to us that every great champion in tennis has always had great movement. Players can have different styles, but if there's one thing that sort of unites everyone who reaches the absolute top of the game, it's movement. And I think in Anisimova's case, what it means is that if she's not playing particularly well, if she's having a bad day, she can't make up for that because she can't scrap and she can't defend and she's just going to make a lot of errors. If she's having a great day and she's on, she will be close to unstoppable because the way she strikes a ball is so pure, especially on the backhand. But if she's a little bit off, I do think she perhaps struggles. I also think her serve is probably a little bit of a weakness. Andreescu was really attacking that second serve. So I think we've seen some more areas where there are potentially some holes in her game. It's very easy to get swept up by that backhand, and I do get swept up by it. But if you actually dig a little deeper, there are perhaps some elements of her game which will hold her back. But I'm interested, like you, David, to see whether she can improve the movement, especially the serve. I think probably will come, or improve anyway. But movement, you know, there's a lot of players who have struggled and never properly managed to overcome that.
By the way, by the time you're listening to this, Andreescu might be through or might be out. She's up against Garbiñe Muguruza overnight tonight. No rest for the wicked, is there? Catherine's been trying to figure out if there's a way she can possibly fit that match into her schedule.
An indoor hammock when you need one?
She's supposed to be asleep that time. So we'll find out. There has to be a question mark over the physicality of Andreescu, I would have thought, after that three-hour match, but we shall see. Let's hope she's going to be okay. Naomi Osaka, we've just seen her the first.
Don't move on, David.
What?
We haven't mentioned the dog.
Oh, what? Sorry. What dog?
I was leaving that for Catherine.
Probably about 30 of those 114 messages were about Coco.
Did you scan
over those?
Sorry, I thought you were on about Oates, who's our mascot for the week. More of Oates later. Is Oates a dog?
Yes.
Yes, oh, good.
I'm a fan of Oates as well, but Oates is a bit more off topic.
Yeah, okay, so tell me about Coco.
Who's Coco is a dog that we're already familiar with.
Oh, the one you had the selfie with, the ran after.
Yep. The one and only time I've broken my photos taken with sports people policy, because it's not professional, was for Coco Andreescu, the dog who came in tow with the Andreescu parents who were utterly bewildered by what was going on.
And yet still charming.
And yet still very, very charming. Who is this crazy woman and why is she touching my dog?
Probably if we just let her get on with this and it'll end soon.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, Coco the dog is wonderful, so well behaved. He was sat front row throughout that match. Looked really engaged for a lot of it as well. It's not like she sleeps through the matches.
No, and she knows when to celebrate.
Yeah, she knows when to celebrate. She's really into it. And she's a toy poodle, which is half of what Billie Jean is. So we're very much here for Coco. Well,
you did say that dogs kind of become a version of their owners. And I mean, you know, she's Andreescu's owner and Billie Jean sleeps all day. So, you know, we understand where we are.
Me and Billie Jean in the indoor hammock.
Correct. Ash Barty has beaten Victoria Azarenka today in a bonkers match, lopsided, 2-6-1 sets, one apiece, and then Barty got the better of her, which most people, I think, were just edging towards Azarenka. This is a good week for Barty already, isn't it? Given that these extraordinary quotes I've been reading, that she may end up on the tour for the whole year. She may not go back to Australia, certainly until after the US Open. I mean, you're talking 6 months, maybe even longer, Matt. I mean, that's I knew she was committed to this trip, and I think particularly because of last year and the fact that she decided she just didn't want to be part of the tour last year. I think it's probably really ramped up the appetite for this year, and this is the way to do it, isn't it, with all the quarantine and everything. But what a commitment, and I think that this is probably a really good start, isn't it, just to have got some wins and be off and running.
Yeah, and she nearly didn't get those wins. I think when we were recording on Thursday, Barty might have been playing, and she ended up having to save a match point in that first match against Kuchova, and then since then she's been more impressive against Ostapenko. She sort of swatted her aside, and she was good today against Azarenka. Really interesting match, Catherine. In your studio chat, you were focusing a lot on how different their backhands are. Barty can use that slice, and Azarenka can flatten out the backhand and sort of hit it with great depth. And that felt like the battleground for the match. But I thought what Barty was able to do with her forehand was really impressive, pulling Azarenka all over the court. And she looks comfortable in Miami. She's obviously the defending champion. She's now got Aryna Sabalenka in the quarterfinals. And if Barty wins that, that will force Osaka to win the title if she wants to overtake her as the world number one at the end of this tournament, which feels like it will come, even if it doesn't come this week, it will come eventually for Osaka with two slams in her pocket already. She feels like the de facto number one, and it's a matter of time before she gets there. But be interesting whether Barty can hold her off as we go into the portion of the season where Barty will probably fancy her chances against Osaka if they play on clay or on grass. So really fascinating, and yeah, what a commitment to be away for the whole season, especially Ash Barty, who we know likes being at home, and I think this will be tricky for her. It'll be a real test. I hope she is okay, really, over these 6 months. I think Craig Tizer, her coach, is going to be with her the whole time. There just isn't time to go back and do a two-week quarantine and make a trip back to Australia worthwhile. So this is it. If she wants to play on the tour, she has to do this. And I think I was reading that she's going to have a base potentially in London and then go out from there. So really interesting period for her.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Do you know, I don't think I've ever seen the Miami Open look this hot. It looks really uncomfortably hot the last few days. I mean, it's always hot, isn't it? Is this players, do you think, just being a little bit kind of softened to the weather systems these days because they just haven't played that much?
Yeah, I wonder if it is that, actually. And it wasn't that hot in the Australian Open, remember. Usually, most players would have played in something like these kind of conditions in Australia. And I'm not sure there were any days that were intense humidity like you get in Miami. Sometimes the temperatures on paper in Miami don't look that big. I think today it said 28, 29. But it's like 90% humidity a lot of the time. And it's the humidity that is suffocating. I think it's particularly difficult for athletes and TV presenters, in my experience. I mean, we have seen some people that you don't expect to see suffer with weather conditions, really suffering with weather conditions. Cue Daniil Medvedev chat.
Well, what happened there last night? Because I was kind of tuning in and out. I was watching that, and I watched the first two sets, didn't I? And I said to Matt, this is good. You want to get this on. Popperin has saved three match points. He was a set and 5-3 down. He saved love 40 on his own serve. He managed to get to a tiebreak, won the tiebreak. And I said to you, I think I've probably seen the best of this match now. I'm gonna watch Line of Duty. and so I did. And then the next thing I know, I had to pause that after 30 minutes because apparently Daniil Medvedev was walking around like an old man with a walking stick. So I mean that you can't not watch that, can you? But that is not an exaggeration. And yet he was still winning.
It is not. And the tragedy of this is that neither of you nor the listener will ever see the impersonation that Greg Rozetsky was doing of the Daniil Medvedev walk. At that time, that's just a treat that I've got in my memory bank forever, and you'll have to live your lives without.
Did you not have your phone at the ready?
Sorry about that.
To record that.
I didn't know. I was too busy just enjoying it in the moment.
The mental pictures will last a lifetime.
Yeah, though. They will.
Right. I mean, he wasn't backing away from it, was he? He wasn't pretending that it wasn't happening. He wasn't. I mean, he didn't lose anything in his performance, really. I mean, obviously, he's lost some of his movement.
Apart from the ability to move at
all. No, but what I mean is he was just still belting the living daylights out of the ball. I mean, even harder, wasn't he? He was going for broke, really. I found it really interesting to watch him under that sort of pressure because I've just not seen it before and see how he reacted.
Well, I think he called it, I can't remember the exact phrase he used, but I think he said something like, this is one of the sweetest victories of my career.
He did. That was exactly the phrase he used.
he said he was cramping like hell, and yeah, he was pleased that he was able to still win. As you said, he was able to, I think, crucially hit serves hard, and I think he probably served the best he served all match right down the stretch. But I mean, we have seen him injured before, and still win. Cramping's different because it was like he just couldn't walk. So how do you play tennis?
He was laughing about it.
But he was laughing about it. He had a very good attitude to it, actually. But it did put me in mind of that 2019 US Open run where there was one match in particular, I think against Hugo Delien, where I thought his tournament was about to be over because he couldn't function sort of bodily. And yet he went on to reach the final. I wasn't totally surprised that he managed to play through it and win. I think if anyone can do it, he can.
Yeah, I mean, even when it was becoming comical, I was a bit like, no big deal, it's Daniil Medvedev. I mean, the more injured he looks, the more likely he is to win and then win again. As you say, cramping is a bit different, but I just kept on thinking about, yeah, that US Open run when he was held together by sticky tape and suffering from throughout the duration from acute lack of bicep, as Hannah Wilkes diagnosed it, and yet still reached the final and almost won the thing. So, yeah, look, cramp is different. He's had a day off today. The women that played yesterday haven't had the day off. And I do worry for them a little bit more, but I think he'll be fine. I'm not sure the normal rules apply.
Alexei Popyrin, tell us about Alexei Popyrin, because I think he's 21 years of age, and this is the first time that I've sat up and looked at him in a different way. He's always been this tall, gangly, adolescent-like frame, I've always thought, and just doesn't look like a grown-up yet. And I was waiting for him to play like a junior in the match, and he didn't.
Well, I think we've already seen that performance, the playing like a junior against Daniil Medvedev performance, or certainly Matt and I have.
It was a bad day.
We had a completely unplanned visit to watch Popyrin against Medvedev at the Australian Open last year. We'd tried to watch the match of the day, if not the week, between Kyrgios and Khachanov, been turned away. Matt had to hold me back from getting involved in aggro with a slightly over-officious Australian steward. So I'm in a bad mood, and we're trudging over to the Rod Laver Arena. And so, okay. Well, Alexei Popyrin against Daniil Medvedev it is. And, I mean, it was barely a contest, was it? It was nothing. It was man against boy, and Medvedev would only have been, 23, maybe 23, I think, at the time. So I was surprised by what he showed us yesterday. He's working with Dominik Hrbatý, the Slovak player, as a coach, and I was asking Daniela Hantuchová a little about him. Obviously, she's Slovak, and they had won Hopman Cup together, I think, and go back a long way, and she said, look, he would not bother working with somebody that wasn't prepared to do whatever it takes. She said he is a taskmaster. She said she would have looked him in the eye and said, are you going to give me everything, before he said yes to that coaching gig. So he's obviously really got something about him, and the opportunity, well, actually, I was going to say the opportunity presented itself for him to show that yesterday. The opportunity didn't really present itself. It looked very much like it was going to be a vaguely competitive straight sets win for Medvedev, and Popyrin forced it to be different. I'm sure he would like to have his time again facing a very hampered opponent.
Got a massive forehand. But, really rocked Medvedev with that forehand. He took it off him for a while. You know, he took the match away. And, I mean, Dominik Hrbatý is somebody I got to know when I was on the tour as a communications manager. He was in this part of his career. And, yeah, he was relentless as a player, just a side-to-side type player. Just, come on, let's duke it out from the baseline. And I can imagine how hard he would get the guy training. And I think Popyrin's clearly a very talented guy. I've spoken to Pat Cash about him in the past, and he rates him as a talent, and he helped him with his volleys a little bit. But I think he's probably also come from a fairly privileged background. I think there's some money behind him family-wise, and yet if it's in him, it'll come out, won't it? If the desire, the just desperation to be the best you can, and that's a good hire in that way, I think.
The Jessica Pegula of men's tennis.
Yeah, whose story goes on, Matt. Mm. How many times has she beaten Karolina Pliskova now in the last 3 weeks?
Three times in a month, which is the same number of times that Rublev has beaten Fucsovics. I was trying to think of any precedent. The only one I could think of was when Federer beat Tsonga in three Sundays in a row at the end of 2011. They met in the Paris final, then the first day of the ATP finals, and then the final of the ATP finals. But it's been an absolute beatdown from Pegula and Rublev on Pliskova and Fucsovics. this month. Pegula, Pliskova especially, I think most people would expect Rublev to beat Fucsovics every time they play. It's obviously unfortunate for Fucsovics that he's kept drawing him, and he actually said when they left the court in Dubai, "I hope I'll never play you again this year," and then he had to play him the next week. But Pegula, Pliskova is, I think, more glaring, partly because of the scores. It was 6-3, 6-1 in Doha, 6-love, 6-2 in Dubai, and it was 6-1, 4-1 in Miami yesterday.
Was it?
It looked like it was just going to be another thrashing, and then I couldn't really tell what happened. It seemed as though Pegula's game just fell apart, and suddenly Pliskova was a breakup in the third set until Pegula got it back together and won the last four games of the match. She looked so comfortable in that matchup, and I think one of the criticisms I would have of Pliskova is she is quite tactically inflexible. You know, she is what she is as a tennis player, and it strikes me that Pegula has totally figured her out, and she goes onto the court knowing what she's going to get and thinking, if I can execute my game, which is quite a similar game, hit the ball hard, hit it flat, if I can get that first strike in, I can beat her. And she's doing exactly that. She looks a better player than Pliskova when they both come up against each other. And that's a real testament to how much Pegula has improved in the last few months, but also an indication of, I think, Pliskova's regression, to be honest.
I'm wondering about that Sasha Bayern coaching relationship.
Is he there? I couldn't see him. He didn't appear to be there.
I don't think he was in Miami. If he is, he was keeping a very low profile because I haven't seen him. But, you know, there's a bit of the Steve Bruce's about that position at the moment, I would say.
Steve Bruce, for anybody who doesn't know, is the Newcastle United manager who is on thin ice. It would surely be the case. So who's Mike Ashley?
I just mean, sort of after every loss, the question comes up, you know.
Oh, right.
Will this be the loss that costs him his job?
Right.
Or will it be the inevitable next loss?
I wonder where Mike Ashley is in the Caroline Pliskova world. Anyway, moving on. Ons Jabeur managed to get a win yesterday over Sofia Kenin. And this, I think, was after Jabeur was on the ground in the previous round. I mean, looking in a terrible state due to cramping and heat exhaustion. I'm just trying to remember who it was that Ons Jabeur played. It was Paola Badosa. She'd won 7-6, 5-7, 7-5, and then followed it straight up with this win over Kenin, which is a cracking win, isn't it? And
yeah.
Jabeur now plays against Sara Cerebes-Tormo, who's been on a fantastic run herself recently.
Yeah, first time Jabeur had beaten Kenin ever. She'd lost the last five matches, never even won a set. So that's a really big deal for her. And Kenin didn't have her best tennis. She improved as the match went on, and she was gritty, as you would expect, and made it tough and competitive, and actually had a break in the deciding set. But it just seemed like Jabeur suddenly flicked a switch and decided, right, okay, I'm going to take over now. And she has an ability to inject pace on her forehand and her backhand and fire off some winners and lots of drop shots as well. She was actually drop shot returning the Kenin serve, which I always think is a bit of a troll when players do that. The ability.
Well, I'm going to do that to you. Brilliant.
The ability to control a serve
coming at you unintentionally, David.
Off
that's
the frame.
Different.
Yeah, that's the best time when you're least expecting it.
Surprise your opponent and yourself.
Correct.
Yeah, but Jabeur makes it a tactic. It's very fun to watch, really audacious.
One of the next round matches we've got in the men's is Jannik Sinner against Emil Roussevori, who's a player with four U's in his surname, which is impressive.
I think they play quite similarly.
I do too. Fast arm, big forehand. It's that ninja-like tennis. I put them and Rublev in that sort of ninja category.
Roussevori is the chap who beat Zverev the other day, isn't he?
Yes, and has double backed it up. His last win was over Mikhail Immer yesterday in the All-Nordic clash. He was the better player in that, but he took three bites of the cherry to serve it out. It was I was very invested in those bites at the cherry because my finish time depended on it. Every time he failed, my dinner and gin and tonic and feet up watching Andreescu time got just a little bit further away.
I found out about the contents of your dinner on the WhatsApp chat 114 messages as well.
I forgot to have dinner. Just was too busy to have dinner. Got home and just suddenly realised, oh my God, I'm so hungry. And obviously in that situation, oven chips is the natural solution. So I had two perfect gin and tonics, a bowl of oven chips, and I watched Andreescu Anisimova. And I thought only an indoor hammock could make this better.
Have you found one? Or I mean, is that a thing or not?
Well, it is a thing. It requires you need to have a beam to attach it to. You can't just put it in plaster because then your ceiling will come down. So I think what I'm going to end up with is a sort of indoor sun lounger.
Right. What about a bed?
Yeah. I mean, that's essentially what I'm trying to achieve here, David.
Right.
A bed in my living room. A way to just have a bed in my living room.
Two beds, Catherine.
Yeah. You've seen right through me.
It's okay. Yes, I don't own oven chips. I don't really, you know, I'm not really a...
David, that is mental.
Make my own, you know.
Do you make your own chips? You hand-make chips.
Yeah, some of us can.
Too much time in your hands.
Well, you know, if you want quality. Right. Now, those are the results that we've had so far, pretty much. Just to have a quick look at some of the matches that gives us. Daniil Medvedev against Francis Tiafoe, which is a rematch of, I think, one I saw maybe at the US Open or one of the summer hardcourt tournaments, which was one of the most one-sided matches I've ever seen. Tiafoe just completely lost it in that match. I mean, Medvedev was brilliant, but Tiafoe's really got himself going, hasn't he? He got a win over Dan Evans in three sets from a set down the other day. And it feels, I mean, we were talking, I think, at the Australian Open when he pushed Djokovic about how he's turned himself around. Now, I think he's just sort of used the period of the pandemic and looked at himself and thought, I'm actually not happy about the results I'm getting, really. I've got to reboot here. I think that's one of the best matches I've seen him play. The match he played to beat Evans from a set down. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. Me too. It was a match that slightly reframed the way I think of Francis Tiafoe. I'd read those quotes about him in his new perspective. I'd seen a couple of matches where there were traces of it in evidence, but I'd previously perhaps thought of him as a little bit flaky in terms of competitiveness and staying power in a match. And there was just not a hint of that against Dan Evans. I didn't give him much of a chance of a set down against Evans. And he just dug deep, turned it on, and just... It was really quite sensational, actually, the way he just suddenly started hitting winners and seemed to get physically stronger as the match went on. I mean, there's no doubting his physicality. And if Medvedev is suffering just a little bit, then who knows? But I think he will need it to be physical to challenge Medvedev and his moustache.
You're not a fan, are you?
Medvedev's not a fan.
Medvedev's not a fan. I endorse the way he's talking about the moustache. It's great. I'm sort of trying it, something. He said, I'm not going to do that weird thing where if I win with the moustache, I'll keep it.
Yeah, he knows it looks bad.
Yeah.
Where are we?
We were at the Medvedev moustache,
yes,
about which there is an entire article on the ATP website if anybody wants further information about it.
Yeah, do you think they're struggling for stories without the big three?
When I was young in the 80s, moustaches were quite a thing. You know, that's what you had.
But not... You had like a You had a full sort of Ian Rush, though, didn't you? That's not what Medvedev has.
Tom Selleck, I mean, those were the
Yeah,
days.
Medvedev just looks like someone's doodled on his upper lip.
I'm only jealous because I can't even manage that. Right, okay, well, those are probably the most interesting matches in the women's In the women's draw, take your pick, including Ash Barty against Aryna Sabalenka in the quarterfinals. Sabalenka thrashed Vondroušová 6-1, 6-2 a little bit earlier today. Petra Kvitova, we were talking about the weather, was amazing against Johanna Konta in a night match when it was nice and cool. She beat her 6-1, 6-2. She then won the first set 6-2 today against Elina Svitolina. And I was really worried for Petra Kvitova's health at the end of her match against Svitolina in the height of the heat, because she lost the next two sets 7-5, 7-5. She was going Medvedev-style cramping. I'm glad she walked off the court with a smile on her face, not looking too bad anyway. But Svitolina just, it was her perfect type of match, and she won through. So Svitolina now faces either Sevastova or Konyu, which is going on at the moment, and Sabalenka,
looking like Sevastova.
Yeah, Sabalenka Barty, and then we've got Jabeur or Cerebes Tormo against either Muguruza or Andreescu. I mean, there's just so many blooming matches. Isn't it awesome?
So many blooming matches.
Yeah, I love it.
Cerebes Tormo, incidentally, I mean, this is a stat that could be out of date by the time this even gets uploaded, but the last person to beat Naomi Osaka.
Oh, really?
13 months ago.
Mm. That's a good stat. I like that. A few other points of interest since we last spoke to you on Thursday of last week, which is when we gave details of Vasek Pospisil's meltdown on the court. That was followed in the next day or so by several of the players who are members of the PTPA, the Professional Tennis Players Association. John Isner said what happened with Vasek Pospisil was unfortunate. Emotions got the best of him, and unfortunately that happens sometimes. Fact remains that he spent countless hours fighting on behalf of his colleagues on the ATP Tour. Better days ahead for Vasek and the players. This was with the hashtag Players Voice, which is what all the players who were commenting on Twitter were using with their tweets. So this was clearly a coordinated effort of some kind. Ryan Harrison said he's a great guy with a huge heart. He spent countless hours and headaches on behalf of all the players. The stress of what you bring onto the court can be overwhelming. Novak Djokovic, from his home, I think in Monte Carlo, or maybe he's in Serbia at the moment, I'm not sure, he said, concerning matters at hand, I am not in Miami. However, Vasek Pospisil is my good friend and I empathise with him wholeheartedly. Players on tour would agree that he is an individual of the highest integrity, who cares about the well-being of his fellow players. I'm hopeful players recognise the importance of standing together. So they've all had their say. They've all said very, very similar things. I must say, we don't know exactly what happened between Pospisil and Gaudenzi, Andrea Gaudenzi, the ATP CEO or chairman, which seems to ignite the fury of Pospisil on the court, but it's another stage of the discussion, and I was somewhat taken aback when I had my attention drawn to an article, an interview with Pospisil back in September on the Tennis Majors website, when he said, "I personally really like Andrea Gaudenzi and Massimo Calvelli, the ATP CEO. I think they're really great guys, men of principle, competent and smart." So things have taken a pretty dramatic turn for the worst in the last 6 months, haven't they, for him to turn in quite the way that he did.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to know, you know, Djokovic saying in his tweet, I empathise with Pospisil's concerns. We still haven't seen a comprehensive, detailed list of the concerns and what they hope to achieve. We now just have a hashtag. That's the only development since the last time we talked about this. We have a hashtag. I don't know who's orchestrating the hashtag behind the scenes, who's unifying that effort, and I would like to know, and potentially worries me, that is a murky area. What I would say is excusing Pospisil's behaviour on the grounds of getting over emotional in the heat of the moment is not a luxury that's always afforded to women or female tennis players or women of any kind ever. So that's just a point I'd like to make. And also, I'm loath a little bit to pick out individuals, but I saw a tweet from Tara Moore, the British player this week, trying to unite female players behind this PTPA hashtag players voice thing. And she used a very unfortunate turn of phrase for me about not letting men fight your battles. And look, I know she has a particular perspective, being a lower ranked player, feeling neglected by the organisations, and that very well may be the case. Again, let's hear the details of your concerns and the evidence to back it up. But if you think Pospisil's fighting women's tennis is battles for you, I think you're probably mistaken about that, or certainly on the basis of the evidence I've seen.
I mean,
that's happening.
He has said that he has reached out to the female tennis players and asked them to be part of this.
Do the PTPA believe in equal prize money?
Good question. I mean, and it should be said that we haven't actually heard from any of the women about this subject.
We've heard
times.
A lot of them saying, the likes of Barty and Azarenka jump out to me, a lot of them making quite pointed remarks, and Venus Williams doing some quite pointed smoothie drinking, saying, I don't want no part of that. Or certainly saying, using the word perspective very pointedly and talking about unity and the need to unify. I think there have been some timely and pointed remarks in that direction that don't specifically reference the PTPA, I should say.
I think one of the sad things is that I actually think that, and we've talked for many, many years about the challenges that the structure of the ATP and the WTA provides in terms of being a jointly owned circuit, and therefore it is difficult to get two effectively competing groups, players and tournaments, in terms of the negotiations, pushing in the same direction. That is difficult if you are a combined tour, and it's something that they've just managed to kind of trundle along with over the years, one way or another. And we referenced Andy Roddick's efforts and success 10 years ago to get extra prize money. So, you know, there may well be a very good case for having a players' union and a players or a players' association that does all the negotiating on behalf of the players.
Let's hear the case.
It's just that to do it right now in the middle of a pandemic, when the sport is bleeding, struggling, when everybody within it is struggling, and to make it a big thing just doesn't feel right to me. It's not, and look, they're not winning many friends, I think, around the world generally. Yes, there may be the bubbles that of people that follow these specific players, but you know, it does concern me that by the time they get their act together, they may have just used up so much of their capital with people and goodwill that it may struggle to get much support. I mean, interestingly enough as well, that Tennis Majors article, Vasek Pospisil was asked specifically, is Justin Gimelstob involved in this? Because, of course, he was previously a part of the ATP player board before he stepped down when his case was being heard. And he said at the time, this back in September, he said, he's not included at all. I've had so many questions about this. He's not. I haven't had a conversation with him, I guess, since he left the tour. He's not involved at all. You might want to ask Novak, but there's nothing that I'm aware of. So to answer it directly, no. Well, I've heard from a few people that reckon that may no longer be the case, and that he may have some sort of role behind the scenes that is influencing what's being said and what's happening at the moment.
He tweeted
I can't confirm
today.
That. Sorry?
He tweeted today, Justin Gimelstob.
Did he? To say?
He was quoting the Novak Djokovic tweet that you read out. He said, "In the complicated relationship between ownership, labour, talent has always been at a fundamental disadvantage based on a lack of institutional knowledge, disproportionate access to material info, and the reality that talent, understandably, needs to focus on performing. If talent is not fervently and exceedingly competently represented, they will undoubtedly be steamrolled in any so-called partnership. Make no mistake, a transparent, equitable partnership actually protects any partnership and is what is sorely missing in the ATP Tour and tennis overall."
Catchy.
Yeah, so I think
he's involved.
I think he's involved. Yeah. And also, by the way, it doesn't feel like that long ago that the players who they're having a go about Andrea Gaudenzi were campaigning for Chris Kermode to be got rid of. So, I don't know. It's all a bit of a mess, I'm afraid. And
let's not forget that it's just a tweet. There's no manifesto or detail of evidence in that casual claim about inevitably in this setup the week whatever the players will be ousted. Well, didn't Simon Briggs have a piece a while back which detailed the voting history on the ATP board, and actually more often than not they did vote with the players.
Chris Kermode said that to you, David, when you spoke to him. He said that he had the deciding vote, and most of the time he sided with the players ahead of the tournaments.
That's right. So anyway, that's the latest. No doubt we'll hear more at some point, we'll bring you up to date with it when we do. So let's bring this one to a close. We mentioned our mascot is Oats, who is owned by Rose Mercier, who's one of our longtime supporters. Thank you ever so much, Rose. A 14-year-old, is it Lassapoo?
Pretty sure.
I don't know so much about dogs. But anyway.
Catherine's gone.
Catherine's gone to go and present live TV, Rose. So very, very much apologetic for my failure to be able to do Oats justice. However, we will get more details from you for our newsletter, which will be going out in the next 48 hours. And you'll be able to see a picture of Oats. And Oats is a belter, because I've already seen a picture. So I'd also like to say hello to Rogue, who's sponsoring me. Rogue is a wonderful cat. Catherine is sponsored by Zeus, the magnificent canine. Matt has got Scousel Mousel. Billie Jean has got Billie Jean King, which is the best. And Chris Albertley is our executive producer. And Matt, I believe we have shout-outs.
Yes, and I should say that in the last show when we did shout outs together, David, we actually forgot to thank everyone.
Oh, yes. Thank you to all those people that I named and commentated on, but didn't thank.
So we will be sure to thank the following people. They are Judy Singleton.
Hey, thanks, Judy. Judy could be a top coach of
tennis coach.
A British tennis player.
Yes.
Don't you think?
I know exactly where you're going with that. Catherine Leap Lazar.
Oh, my word. What a name.
Fantastic name.
Where's she from?
That is Catherine, spelt differently to our Catherine, with a K and with a Y as well. But Catherine Leap Lazar. Oh,
that's fantastic. I want to know where you're from, Catherine. It's the best name. Mm. And I think a player with a name like that is winning a tournament in Acapulco on a yearly basis.
Why Acapulco?
Why not?
Yeah, fair enough. And Julie Tharp.
Julie's a commentator who is going to sit alongside me in the commentary box and talk about the latest goings-on at Wimbledon. She didn't know that, but she is. So, Julie, thanks ever so much. Oh, yeah, I've got to carry
I'm
on.
I'm really
now,
lost for words, David.
Sorry, Julie. Thanks so much for your support. Catherine's gone to talk about tennis on the telly, because that's what she does for a living when she's not talking to us. We'll be back again on Thursday with another update to Miami, which just seems to be going on forever. We don't care, because we just sit here for an hour and talk about it in the aftermath. And we'll be back then to talk to you. Thanks ever so much for your company. Leave us a review on iTunes if you haven't already. Tell your friends to listen, and we'll speak to you on Thursday.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Listen to this Acast show ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.